Welcome to the Kelsey Mental Health Resource Center's Pinwheel Education Series on supporting a friend or loved one with an eating disorder. The Pinwheel Series is a bi-monthly forum that brings together experts and the public to talk about mental health and mental wellness. Everything related to the Pinwheel Series, including a recording of today's session, can be found at kelseymentalhealth.ca/pinwheel. For those of you joining us for the first time, the Kelsey Mental Health Resource Center is a provincial mental health and substance use information and resource center serving BC children, youth, and families. We also provide peer support to families and youth, as well as to people of all ages struggling with eating disorders. Please go to our website, kelseymentalhealth.ca, for more information, resources, and for our contact information. Okay, so I'll go ahead and get started by introducing our first speakers. It is my pleasure to welcome Tom Bosla and Karen Dixon to the Pinwheel. Tom has an MA from Simon Fraser University in psychology. He has been working in mental health for 24 years, specializing in eating disorders for the last 14 years. As a youth and family clinical resource educator, Tom's specific focus is working with families of youth with eating disorders. He has written and produced two videos on meal support that are being used across Canada and around the world and has significantly increased the amount of family involvement in the treatment of eating disorders at BC Children's Hospital. Tom offers educational workshops to families, co-facilitates a support group for parents, co-facilitates therapy groups for youth, and continues to develop new groups and ideas in the program. Karen is both a social worker and a nurse by training, and has worked as a family therapist at the Provincial Specialized Eating Disorders Program in their inpatient program for the past 7.5 years. Prior to this position, she worked in the University of Alberta Hospital's Eating Disorder Program as an operating room nurse in Edmonton, Hawaii, and California, and as a child protection social worker in Burnaby. She loves working with youth and is passionate about working with parents as the key to their children's recovery. She believes that humility, kindness, warmth, rock-solid teamwork, a healthy sense of humor, and silly putty are essential ingredients for this work. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Karen and Tom. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. So I guess let's get going. So Karen and I work in the inpatient unit, and our primary work is working with families, so this topic seemed like a natural fit for us. But when we were asked to do this presentation, we thought, what could we fit into 10 minutes that would be helpful? We just finished a workshop last week that was 10 hours on a small piece of what we think is helpful. So trying to pin it down to just a few ideas was difficult. So we came up with some pieces of general advice that we think are helpful.
So, first of all, we think it's important to get some education, get some information about eating disorders. Eating disorders are complicated and they're very diverse. They're almost as diverse as each person who has an eating disorder. They cover a wide variety of behaviors and thoughts and feelings. So get reading. Read some of the more recent material. The Kelty Resource Center has put out some great publications. The From Survive to Thrive book. Locke and LaGrange have some great books out there as well. Just as some examples, there's lots out there. Go to the Kelty webpage. Just get some education. Try and get all of your questions answered about eating disorders before trying to support your friend or loved one. Get to a place where you have a good grip on what's going on about that eating disorder stuff.
Yeah. So our second point then is to listen. So after you do all your reading, assume that most of that is wrong. It should give you a bit of a base to understand and to start asking your own meaningful questions that apply to the person. Don't assume that what you've read is true. Don't think that you're an expert. Don't make assumptions. Try to listen and try to understand what's going on for that person and how you can be helpful. Don't spend a lot of time trying to explain. Spend a lot of time trying to understand what's going on for them.
Next, be patient. Recovering from an eating disorder can take years, not months or weeks. And it's not a straight line journey. There'll be advances and setbacks, gains and losses, emotions and struggle. And it's important to recognize that each step is a part of the journey.
Just the part about listening. Often people are not that interested in talking about these really personal things. And so being patient to understand that it's going to take time to build that relationship and to for people to feel comfortable to talk. Given that it takes a long time and recovery is a journey, we want people to make sure that they're taking care of their own needs and taking care of themselves first. So recovery takes a long time, doesn't happen in a straight line. And we need to be healthy and taking care of our own self before we can be helpful to someone else.
We use, on the inpatient unit, the oxygen mask metaphor. You know, when you're on the plane and they say if the thing drops that you should put your own oxygen mask on first before helping your child or dependent person. And it's a little bit of that same idea. And then it's important to get professional help. Eating disorders are extremely serious. They can be life-threatening. And people who are trained in treatment know what to do most of the time, some of the time. If you get into trying to diagnose what's going on with your friend or loved one, or keep secrets because they ask you to, or try to do therapy on your friend or loved one, because at least she's talking to me, that can be extremely dangerous. Every day that a youth is underweight is a day that they're doing damage to their bodies, and so it's important to get professional help.
So these were some of the ideas that we came up with, just kind of general ideas. We also do therapy groups on the unit with some of the kids. So we, of course, asked them what their thoughts were on this. We ask them in the context of when they leave the program, what are they worried about? And so the kind of things that they told us were being judged or being treated differently, being stigmatized, being labeled, being treated differently, people making comments about their bodies or how they look, and figuring out how to manage their treatment in real life. So we took their worries and we asked them what would be helpful. And this is what we came up with.
So they told us that talking to people after leaving the hospital can be really frightening. That they say, I may look different than when you last saw me, even though my eating disorder is not gone. And worry about what questions you might ask me or what comments you might make. And they want you to remember that they are a person first, and then a person with an eating disorder second. So they want, this is what they told us, when you see me, say, I'm happy that you're back.
Or I missed you.
We should hang out.
Let's catch up on what's happened when you're gone. So these things, saying these kind of things, makes me feel cared for and special. Focusing on my appearance, even saying something positive, makes me feel self-conscious, insecure, angry, and embarrassed. They also worry about judgment, stigma, comments that show people that don't get it. So saying things like, why can't you just eat? Or, I wish someone told me that I could eat whatever I want. This is what they said on that. I know that it's difficult to understand my eating disorder. What I need you to understand is an eating disorder is a mental illness, not just a diet or a trend. It isn't just about vanity or looking a certain way. It's complex and recovery takes time, months or years. It's not as simple as just eat. When people try to understand what I'm going through, I feel supported. When people treat this illness as a phase or stubbornness or something silly, it makes me feel misunderstood and alone.
The kids talked about how eating can be really, really, really scary. They said meal times can be difficult. If we are eating together, it's helpful when you eat with me and be a good role model. It helps if you try to distract me with interesting conversation. It helps if you treat me normally. And these types of things can help me get through a difficult meal and make it feel natural. But talking about food and focusing on my eating disorder makes me feel stressed out, self-conscious, and different.
So that was the thoughts from some of the kids in our unit and some of our thoughts. And we look forward to hearing from some of the other speakers.
Thank you so much, Tom and Karen, for your insight on that. That was fantastic. As a reminder, we will have some time for questions at the end, but first I'm going to introduce our second speaker, Erica Muck. Erica is excited to be speaking today at the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center's Pinwheel. She recently graduated from SFU and loves helping youth with mental illness, just like the staff and nurses at BC Children's Hospital helped her. In her free time, you can find her watching murder mysteries, trying new restaurants, or watching the NBA. Welcome, Erica.
Hi, everyone. Like she said, I'm really excited to be here. I'm happy to help out any way I can. This place means a lot to me, and I have fond and not so fond memories of it. But I was an inpatient here more than one time. I also did the day program, and I was an outpatient for some time as well. Really, really struggled. I remember having eating disorder thoughts since I was about 8 years old. So yeah, my high school years were spent here. So some things that I was trying to think back on that really helped me. It is kind of a blur, but I was really thinking about different qualities and traits that my family did or my friends did that helped me overcome it. And I really think that they were a big support, but in the end, it has to really come from yourself and it has to come from you. So I don't want to take all the credit because they were huge, but it was really my decision to get better in the end. So just a couple words. I was brainstorming words that came to mind when I was thinking about this. The first word was perseverance. Like Tom and Karen mentioned, it's so slow and it's up and down. You might think that you're having a good month and then the next month everything falls down at the wayside. You might have two or three different resources that you have to seek out to get help. You might have a relapse. So perseverance, just don't give up. You're not gonna get better in a month. You're not gonna get better in a year. It's gonna take a lot of time. Another word that I came up with was commitment. You really have to work at it day after day. It's not like you can take a day off from this, you can't. And I really found this with my family. They were fully 100% committed to helping me get better, whether that means driving back and forth from the hospital every day or taking me out on weekend passes and being with me the entire time. Whatever it was, you have to be committed. The staff here really committed as well. There's staff here that I still think about every single day because I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't met them. Tom and Karen mentioned patience. That kind of goes with perseverance, super slow process. So I'll kind of skip over that one quickly. Another word that I came up with was burnout. Because it is so slow, you get tired and you get frustrated with the process. And I think that you have to take time for yourself. Of course, you're always going to be thinking about the person you love who's struggling with an eating disorder, but you have to take time for yourself. So whether that means, you know, my parents would be nurturing their own relationship at the same time as helping me, or, you know, I have two other siblings, so doing things with my other siblings, you have to look after the other people in your life and yourself. Another one I came up with was frustration. You're going to be frustrated, but do not take it out on the person. I found that when my family would get a little bit frustrated with me, I picked up on it instantly. It's super obvious. But also, it would just bring about feelings of guilt and remorse, and it just wouldn't put you in a good place to try and work towards getting better. And you really have to be a team in order to overcome something like this. Tom and Karen mentioned this as well, but I think getting professional help is huge. It's not something that people know how to overcome. It's not like you're taking a pill and then you're better. You really need professional help. These people are trained, they know what they're doing, they've been doing it for years. And I think you also need to have a professional that you really trust. I remember there was one doctor that worked here who I'm still in contact with, and I think so highly of him, and I could tell him anything, and he just really, really helped me overcome this. And he was non-judgmental, 100% behind me the entire time. A couple more points that I want to talk about. So I kind of look at an eating disorder like a tug of war, and the eating disorder is on one side of the rope and the individual's on the other side. And the eating disorder is strong. It's stronger than the individual themselves. If the person's tugging at that rope alone, the eating disorder is going to win. They got sucked in the first place, so they can't get out of it. They're too far in. But if you have 2, 3, 4, 10 people pulling on that rope, eventually you're going to outstrength, if that's the word, the eating disorder. And it's gonna succumb to whatever support system you have in place. And I've always kept that in the back of my mind, and I always picture my family pulling on a rope with me being in the front and just everyone behind me pulling as hard as they possibly could. I had one other point that is kind of having to do with after you leave the hospital. I found that my parents were very hypervigilant about where I was going, who I was with, what I was gonna eat. If I was out for the full day, they're like, okay, what are you eating for lunch? And it came to a point where it was like, Mom, I'm okay, I can do this. So I think you really have to, it happens really slowly, but you have to loosen the rein and slowly start to trust that person again. With their eating, I'd be completely fine, not even thinking about what I was going to be eating for lunch, because I just wasn't worried about it anymore. And my mom would say, "What are you going to eat for lunch?" And then all of a sudden, I was like, "I don't know." Like, now you're making me think about it. Now you're making me worry about it. And she just slowly started to let go. And then now, it's like another lifetime now. It's not even an issue anymore. We don't even talk about it. It doesn't come up in our day-to-day conversation. She never asks me, "Did you eat lunch today?" Because she trusts me enough to know that I'm taking care of myself the way that is necessary in order for me to go on and be without an eating disorder. So I think that it's really slow, but at some point after you leave the hospital, you slowly start to loosen up and regain trust in that person. And I think that that's really important. If you're overbearing, they're going to be stressed and they're going to be worried about it when they don't necessarily have to be anymore. I think that's all I had for now. I'm sure there'll be questions later, though.
Thank you so much, Erica.
Of course.
It's really wonderful to hear your personal experience. Thanks for sharing with us. Now I'll introduce our last speaker, last but definitely not least. I am happy to introduce our third speaker, Mary McCracken. Mary McCracken is a Forest Parent in Residence at the Kelty Mental Health Resource Center. She provides peer support from a parent's perspective, assists with navigation, and connects families with resources. Her family has experienced mental health challenges firsthand and has been involved with various services and programs. As a mother of three, she shares her knowledge and what has helped her own family. She offers empathy and encouragement with families facing similar challenges. And on top of all that, she's a wonderful colleague. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. Well, you know, I was thinking about what to say, and I've got to say this journey with my daughter was the most difficult thing that I've ever gone through. Just a little bit of background. Between grade 11 and grade 12, our family was hijacked by this thing called an eating disorder. It happened in the summer. My daughter said, oh, I want to lose a couple of pounds. It was swimsuit season, and she usually is very athletic and hadn't been doing a lot of activity, and I didn't think anything of it. And so when you finish school in June, and by the end of August, she was an inpatient at the hospital here. It happened. It just was unbelievable to go through the process of, oh, I'm not going to eat this, to suddenly you're down this path where you're happy that she's eating anything, or there's safe foods, and I knew she needed help. And you've got, as a mom, you've got to trust your instinct that there's trouble there. So we came for an information session here at the hospital, and she left in a wheelchair because it had affected her heart, and she had to stabilize in the hospital, and then she went into the inpatient here program here. And a lot of kids only need to do it once, but of course we have to do it the hard way. So we were here twice, and we were day treatment, and my daughter's doing fine now. But it, when I see parents coming in, and it's that, I use the analogy of deer in headlights. Oh my gosh, this child that you love so much, you don't know how to help them, how to support them. What is going on? How do you get help? And I really believe in the power of the family. You know your child better than anybody, and you got to trust your instincts as to along the journey. The eating disorder, as I said, is this big bully that moves into the family and changes dynamics of the whole family. So for a sibling, they sort of understand that, well, you know, my sister isn't well, so she's getting more attention than me. But, you know, they have needs as well. And, you know, so it affects that. It affects the parents' relationship, because people have, when you're in a crisis, people will have different ways of wanting to handle it. And it's so important that everybody's on the same page to fight this, as you said, that rope, to be able to fight it. Our family was fortunate enough to be involved with a multi-family therapy program that the hospital offered. And at the end, the last session, the facilitator said, we can discuss anything you want. And I sent out an email to everybody, to the parents, the six families, and I said, what do you want to discuss? And three families wrote back saying, we want to talk about the effect on the marriage, you know, the relationship within the marriage and how difficult it was. So we brought that up, and I thought, wow, you know, that's half the group. So, as I said, the eating disorder affects the whole family. When we came into the inpatient unit, we were told that we were to be involved in family therapy. And I thought, oh no, please don't tell me that you're going to tell me that this eating disorder is my fault because I didn't let her have a cookie when she was three and she, you know, trauma or something. So anyway, the family therapy was great because it was a safe place for everybody to be able to talk, so that if we were doing something that she didn't like, she could bring it up. And if we were concerned, we could bring it up in sort of a safe setting. And even after she was discharged, we carried on privately with that. And I know a number of people who have moved along their journey have done that. I found as the eating disorder was getting stronger that I was on the front line and I was also the whipping pole. So I was the one that was getting all the negative emotion and the upheaval. And you felt like you couldn't do anything right. And a psychiatrist once told me that really, like, an eating disorder is emotion dysregulation. So the youth is overwhelmed with emotion, and how do you handle it, or the conflict. So I think it's really, some may do an eating disorder, some kids may self-harm, some may self-medicate, all negative coping skills. So it's important to educate yourself about the eating disorder and accept there's going to be certain food-related behaviors that your loved one engages in that you really won't understand. And I think really some days, you know, the struggling youth doesn't understand either. Love and support. Do not assume the role of therapist. You're so involved frontline and helping out that, you know, you're trying to do everything, you know, for them, but rely on the experts. Get professional help. Your child may push you away, but keep on trying. As Tom said, avoid statements like you're too thin or you're out of control. Or I find if you use statements starting with an I, sort of I am concerned, or it takes away the confrontation. If you're sort of you know, immediately their back goes up. And the need for professional help is not an indication of a failure on your behalf. It's that eating disorders are complicated, and the individual will benefit from a team approach that is dealing with their physical, their mental, their spiritual, and emotional needs. And don't feel guilty. You're not responsible for your child's eating disorder. Most important, it's their journey. They will change when they're ready to. When my daughter was admitted to the eating disorder inpatient, I asked, well, how long does this usually take? And much to my horror, they said it can take, you know, 5 to 7 years. And I thought, oh no, you don't know. We'll work really hard and we're going to do this. We're going to beat this thing. And they sort of looked at me and thought, oh, we've got one of those, do we? But anyway.
They're all one of those.
Okay. But when I realized that it wasn't my journey, it was her journey. She's got to figure out what it is, what purpose the eating disorder is serving. What are the underlying issues for her? When I was able to step back and give that space to her and trust that she's in good hands, then she could take the reins and go through the difficult job of figuring out what was going on. You need to be beside your child during the process, not leading them. Let the experts lead them. And celebrate every step forward. Some steps may seem really small to you, but they're huge steps for the struggling individual. And each step that's closer to breaking free the eating disorder is worth celebrating. Another thing, prepare, plan, and plan again. Under the eating disorder for my daughter was severe anxiety. And the approach of planning ahead in her recovery was key. So we sat down and we planned meals out for the week. So there was no, and that protected both of us from last minute substitutions where I'll switch this and this, and then you realize that she's eating half of what she should have. But it also let her get her mind around what was going to happen. So, okay, big family celebrations, Christmas, Thanksgiving, it's all to do with food and huge sources of stress. Well, if you sit down ahead of time and sort of visualize what it's going to look like and what she feels comfortable in being able to eat, how is she going to get that? Is she going to serve herself? Is somebody else going to? And we also had a signal that she would give me a signal if she was totally overwhelmed, and we would quietly leave the table and let her settle and come back. But there needs to be some flexibility. In my daughter's case, the meal plan, of course she's in high school, you have a break in the morning, but you don't have recess in the afternoon. You don't want to stand out, well, oh, she's the one that needs to eat, you know. So she didn't want to have a snack in the afternoon. So we adjusted so she had more at breakfast. So there's a way of flexibility which was a win-win situation. Again, I don't know if this was mentioned, but it's important that you don't let the eating disorder define them. Reinforce their positive qualities. Catch the good behaviors. Do not let all the attention go towards the eating disorder, because it just tends to reinforce it. You need to focus on the feelings and the emotion as well as the food. Your support in changing these behaviors is vital, but only one part of the recovery. So you have to look at the emotion or what's going on, as Tom said, and not just you have to eat this vegetable or this, you know, carbohydrate. Educate friends and family. And this is tough because you want them to be as informed as you are so that they can make your loved one feel safe and supported at a meal. But I have found that a lot of people with eating disorders have the view that everybody's looking at them, they're overanalyzing what they're doing. So, you know, is that, are they going to be all going, oh, is she eating enough? Did she eat enough? So it's a delicate balance as to you want to educate but also provide the support. And I can't stress enough how important it is to take care of yourself. And I know this was said, but you can't support others if your tank is empty. I was the whipping pool, and so you get to the point where you're exhausted, you're so worried, but if you take time for yourself, and it's going to look different for everybody, is it talking to a friend, is it going for a walk, is it reading a book, is it taking a bath, is it, you know, whatever it is, that's feeding your tank, and it's modeling good self-care. It is showing that eating disorder, it's not going to hijack the whole of everybody's life. And it also models, I think, being able to handle stress and being able to cope with adversity. It's important to keep on working on that relationship with your child. The child may not accept or come across that they're accepting it, but write little notes, put a little note in their lunchbox or text messages, be there for them. Communicate to your loved one that you love, you accept, you appreciate, you value him or her. They may not seem to want this, but keep going on with it. You want to keep the lines of communication open so that when they're ready, you're there. I found it helped to contact the school counselor so that there was a safe place for her to go to if she became overwhelmed at school, and that sort of she knew what was going on. And most importantly, ask your child, how can you help? Because they may have a different view as to how you're going to help as to what you think you're going to. And listen carefully. What they need may change as they're going along their recovery journey. Keep an open mind, suspend judgment or doubt. And if you listen and understand your loved one's emotional needs, you can be more of help to them. Look at your own issues regarding weight and shape. And so suspend your own dieting behaviors or don't have diet foods around and eat regular meals. Again, model that. Be patient. Let them know that you're going to be by their side throughout recovery, no matter how long it takes, and And recovering is not a linear path. There's dips and, but, you know, recovery is possible. From experience, I have a stronger relationship with my daughter now that we've been through this together, and I understand her better. So do your best to listen, be patient, show compassion. Your loved one will appreciate it more than you know.
Thank you so much, Mary. It's really great insight into a parent's perspective. And now we have quite a lot of time, actually, for questions. First, I'm going to go to the phone and see if there's anyone there that might like to ask a question to any of our speakers.
Hi, it's Dawn from Kamloops. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Thank you. My daughter was demonstrated sort of eating disorder behaviors and talked about a particular photo that she was not, it was not until she was 24 that this occurred. There had been no kind of build up to this. At age 24, so this is 7 years ago now, she suddenly looked at one photo and said, I'm too fat. And that was the beginning of it. And we're now 7 years in. She's receiving services at the Eating Disorders Program here in Kamloops. But I'm wondering about recommendations for parenting an adult child. She doesn't live with me. She has a small child of her own that she co-parents 1 week with her and 1 week with his father. Does anybody have any ideas? Thanks.
It's Mary. I would say it does get tricky when they're not in your house. And even as dealing with a young adult versus a young child where you can pick up and force them to go to an appointment, I think the key still is keeping those lines of communication open, providing, helping her get resources as to where she can get help. Help offer to make that happen. Is it babysitting their child? Is it driving them? Is it, do they, you know, I don't
know. Yeah. I think from my perspective, it's I agree. It's kind of a bit of a different ball game in the sense that when you're working with an adolescent or a child who has an eating disorder and they're in your home, it's kind of your house, your rules, and there's a sense of that you're the parent and you know best. But when you're an adult working with your adult child, there are different rules around privacy, there are different rules around confidentiality, there are different rules about whether or not your child will allow you to be involved in their treatment or not, or to varying degrees about how you can be involved in their treatment. And so I agree with you, Mary. I think that the focus is, it has to be around your relationship with your adult child and working on that relationship and seeing if you can strengthen those ties. Because if you can strengthen those ties, you can work towards increasing the trust and increasing the involvement. Because I think you said it in a beautiful way, Erica. This is a really hard thing to do on your own. Do you have any thoughts, Tom?
I would just kind of add on to what you're saying that there's lots of ways that we can support and help someone. So to the extent you can cook meals and take them over, to babysitting, to helping to manage other stress, to being someone to talk to, giving that kind of non-judgmental place that she can talk about these things. There's a wide variety of things that we can do to help. Even when we don't kind of have direct control. And like if someone was going through a hard time in their life, what could you do? Well, you talk to them, you cook a dinner for them, you watch their kids, you mow their lawn, you those kind of things that are just helping her manage her life.
Hi there, this is Lois here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
So my question, my daughter's 17 and we're in our third year, I think, of recovery. And she's doing quite well generally. However, the one thing that really kind of gets in the way many times is her anger. And so I'm just struggling to find that place around, you know, having some good boundaries around, you know, behavior and that sort of thing. But then also, you know, trying to listen, you know, but sometimes it just, you know, comes out so strongly. It's just really difficult. Anyway, I don't know if you had any advice around that.
Hi, Lois. This
Hi.
Is Erica. I think that I know how you said she's doing quite well generally, but the eating disorder is seeing that she's doing well, and it's fighting.
Sorry?
The eating disorder is seeing that your daughter is doing well, and it's beginning to worry and get stressed. It's gonna it's gonna fight back, and it's going to try and plant its heels, because it knows that she's doing well and that she is starting to realize that she doesn't necessarily need it anymore. The anger, I don't know, I had a lot of anger. I think that deep down it was actually sadness. But I would take it out on my mom, my best friend, my family, whoever. But I think that if she's really that as close as you say she is to being well and being better, that I think that she'll start to become happy about beating it rather than, I think it gets to a point of like, I don't know the right word, it gets to a point of a, like, it's just knowing that it's almost gone and it's stressing and it's worried and it doesn't want to leave her yet, but she's ready to get rid of it. So that's why she's mad. And it's actually the eating disorder that's mad, not necessarily her.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
Have a thought.
Yeah, I was going to say something about the workshop that Tom and I just finished. We work with parents on emotions and helping parents support their kids with their emotions. And one of the most important emotional support tools that we offer parents, so the one that Tom calls the closest thing to magic that he's experienced in working in this field is validation. And that your daughter is angry is something to respect and is something to acknowledge that it's, and I so appreciate what you've said, Erica. It reflects that there's a conflict going on inside of her. And that deserves to be taken seriously. And so if you can validate your daughter's experience, that can be a really relationship healing thing to do, and your daughter will feel less alone in her struggle to release the eating disorder.
It makes sense that she's angry. If we go from what Erica's saying, that the eating disorder is screaming and desperate, and she's hearing this constant stream of this is going wrong, and she has this other voice, and it's all complicated and difficult, and there's all kinds of emotions, and it's actually a really good reason to be angry. And when we respect that and when we acknowledge that, it can help.
And I find that if you validate their feelings, you don't have to agree with it, but if you acknowledge and validate, then the ante doesn't have to be increased more to be heard, if that makes sense. You know, I'm going to be even more angry or more, because say, oh, they've acknowledged and understand that.
I'm really angry at you, Mary.
Yeah. Oh.
So I was looking for some validation, and then I would try and get angrier.
I'm role playing.
All right. Just picture a good role play there, and that really explained that.
Yeah, it's about being seen. That's what validation is. It is, you people feel seen, they feel heard, they feel respected and understood.
Okay. I think we have time for about one more question from the phone, if someone wants to go ahead. If there's any more questions from the phone.
I have a question.
Great, go ahead.
I'm a youth worker, and so I'm just wondering if I suspect that one of my youth has an eating disorder, and I may have missed this, it's a few minutes late, but like, what questions are okay to ask? Like, I'm always afraid to bring anything up, but if I think something's off, I would like to approach the subject, but I don't know how.
It's a really good question. I think what I would offer is speak from your own point of view. Tom and I talked to teachers and school-based professionals about this, because that is likely one of the key places where an eating disorder might get uncovered. And approaching the youth and expressing worry about their health in a more general way, rather than saying, I think you have an eating disorder, or you're too skinny, or encourage, or if you have it within your mandate, offer to take the youth to see a doctor, or suggest that you need to speak to the youth's parents. Because it might not be an eating disorder. So suggesting that it's an eating disorder is inappropriate. The child might have cancer, and that's what might be why they've lost weight. They really need, the parents need to be informed, and the youth needs to see a doctor. That would be what I suggest. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that does help somewhat. So it's a good starting place for sure. Thank you.
When we've talked with school counselors, they have sometimes expressed concern about kind of privacy and confidentiality, and they don't want to break the trust. So kids have come see them, and I don't want to let anyone know, because then no one will come see me anymore.
Right.
And we think it's a real medical emergency potential, and that you have to take safety as primary. So
it's the life over limb argument. If you're really worried about it, I mean, some youth can become so malnourished that they can collapse, and so it's not something to fool around with.
Thank you for our questions on the phone. Now we'll go to questions in the room for our speakers.
Just kind of dovetail on that, being a school counselor as well. With regards to, you know, approaching a student that you have seen, you know, their eating habits, and you've sort of watched it for a while, and I'm about to approach the student now, and we have a great relationship, so I can be definitely, you know, express worry and be very natural. My worry is that a lot of her stress comes from the home, and she's expressed that. So at what point do you loop in the family if it's, for her, you know, a trigger?
Do you think that the family would not be supportive, or is it...
No, I think that they would, but I feel that she would be fearful to bring it forward, and I will bring it forward no matter what, in terms of, but just how to express to her that I understand that fear, but this is, you know.
I think you have to communicate to her that I understand your fear of bringing it up to your family, but if it is an eating disorder like you think that it is, mm-hmm. like they said, you have to, it's life or limb. If
yeah.
you can't let her continue, she'll just get sicker and sicker.
Yeah.
If you let her continue to suffer, and you can just say, I would tell her before.
Oh yeah.
Say, if you're not going to bring it up to your family, then I'm going to contact them,
mm-hmm.
because I care about you, and I want you to do well and be well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's scary though. It's tough.
Is there an age that you would go directly to a doctor instead of through parents? Or
yeah, she's older, grade 12.
Yeah. Oh, you ask hard questions.
I don't think you can make it a cutoff age, because I think everyone's so different that you can't say, like, a certain age.
Yeah. I would go to the parents, and I appreciate how you're saying that, that there's stressors in the home, but like my role here is family therapy, and I see eating disorder treatment and recovery as a family affair.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to suggest that she needs medical attention is a starting point, but to also suggest that if there are stresses in the home, that that might be one area that's targeted in eating disorder treatment.
Mm-hmm. Also, her family might not realize how much pain or stress they're causing her. I don't know what the issue is, but it might be something that they can work towards changing, which would better support their daughter. Maybe it's, I don't know, something that they're doing or how they're behaving, something like that.
There are also, and this gets into the School Act and all of the other pieces of legislation that guide what we do and don't do, but if you're worried about her life, safety trumps privacy, right? And you're not a doctor, so you're not bound by those boundaries around confidentiality.
And if she doesn't feel comfortable having that discussion, you know, you can offer to do it with her and
in conjunction.
Collaboratively it's moving. collaboration is my modus operandi, right? To work together. So,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a question for Erica. I was thinking about this about, you know, I mean, I don't know if you could comment on this as well, Tom, but we get to see, I have the privilege of seeing children and youth and their families while they're here, and then there's this big chunk that's outside of hospital, and that's where recovery happens and ends, and you can say, I don't have an eating disorder anymore. How do you see, how did you see what your friends did in terms of being in your life could you comment on how friends supported you to recover, not directly with your eating disorder, or maybe directly?
Right. I felt really lucky. I had a really good group of friends. They're the ones who actually brought it up to my mom from the get-go, from the first place. So they noticed it right away and was like, we need to help her. When I was here, they would come visit me in truckloads, like almost to the point where I was like embarrassed that there would be all of us here. Like there would be like 10 of us in a room. But I think, so they had unwavering support in that way. But I think when I left the hospital, and was trying to get back into my regular routine, like at school and things, they would eat with me. They would support me to make good decisions on the weekends outside of school, but also they would just treat me any differently. It never got brought up unless I wanted to talk about it. They never judged me, they never made comments, and it was always like, I missed you at school, or we missed seeing you every day. It wasn't, you look different, or you're a different person. It was just, I miss you. I think getting back into that regular routine, seeing them regularly, but also doing activities that don't necessarily revolve around food. So instead of going out to a restaurant for dinner, go see a movie and have dinner at home before, and they would be completely fine with that. Or I would meet them later if I felt like I had to eat at home versus at a restaurant, and they would be completely fine with that. I wish that everyone who was going through an eating disorder had the support from their friends that I had, because they really made a key difference. And I think that, I don't know everyone else's story, but if you're a friend, please do that to the person that you're supporting.
We have time for one more question, if there's any questions in the room.
Can I just ask, is part of the treatment approach looking at different ways of coping? So if you look at the eating disorder as a way of coping with other things that are happening in your life, just wondering what kind of delta underneath eating disorder.
Yes.
Maybe you could repeat the question because I'm sure you couldn't hear.
Question was, is there a part of treatment that's about learning how to cope? Because eating disorders can be seen as a way of coping. For here, the answer is that yes. We have some groups specifically that are about coping skills and emotional regulation. Mindfulness is a component of our treatment. Planning and organization is part of our treatment. Family therapy, so the family's coping better. Education is a part, which are all kind of different ways of learning how to manage your anxiety and your feelings.
I think one of the things that we explore is what function does the eating disorder serve in the youth life? Is it to help with confidence, or is it to help avoid growing up, or is it to be able to feel assertive or things like that? And then we would look at, well, how else can the youth get those needs met in not quite so life-threatening a way? I don't know if you have any comment about that, Erica.
Yeah, I think it's common to have an eating disorder to deal with your anxiety. And I think that for me, breaking out of the routines of eating the same thing every day was a huge step. And it's slow. So if you can slowly start breaking the anxiety in other areas of your life, the eating disorder will probably be one of the last things to come around, but it will eventually, if you continue to challenge yourself and find other ways of dealing with your anxiety, whether that be being distracted. I used to knit, there was a Christmas I knit 20 scarves because I had to feel like I was doing something, but I was stuck here. So I had to feel like I was making progress and working towards something. So that having other goals and working towards those can be really helpful.
Great. Well, I just want to thank our speakers today for your thoughts and insights on our topic. It was great to have multiple perspectives and ideas of ways to support our friends and loved ones who are struggling with eating disorder. I'd also like to thank our attendees in person and on the phone for coming to today's pinwheel. And a recording of this pinwheel will be available in the next week or so on our website. But once again, thank you to our speakers today. Thanks so much. And I hope you enjoyed today, and we'll come to our next pinwheel. It's going to be on January 24th, and the topic will be PTSD and recovery. So thanks again. Enjoy your afternoon.